Numbers chapter 14 tonight. Numbers chapter 14. So good to see you here this evening. Blessings can go. So let's watch the blessings go. Thank you, sir. I said Numbers 14. I actually meant Exodus 14, so I apologize for that. It'll help us all to be in the right book tonight, wouldn't it? Exodus chapter 14. I wish that some of you adults were as excited about going to church as some of these blessings are. I'll tell you what, these blessings, they're ready to take off. Exodus chapter 14 tonight. Exodus chapter 14. Tonight is one of those evenings in which I'm preaching a message that I don't know that I would normally preach in the course of a meeting. The only way that I can explain it to you is that God gives it to us to just on a special occasion, for whatever the reason, to give to you tonight. He knows the needs. But I'd like to begin reading in a moment, Exodus chapter 14 and verse number 10. But before I read, let me give you a little context of what has happened. You open the book of Exodus and God is about to do an amazing thing. He is about to raise up a man by the name of Moses from the middle of nowhere to lead the nation of Israel free from the mighty country of Egypt. You see, for 40 years, Moses spent time, they say, in the king's palace, in Pharaoh's daughter's household, and had to run from the Egyptians after he killed an Egyptian. And as he left that place, now he's 40 years on the backside of a desert. For 40 years, all basically Moses has heard is, bah, bah, that's about it. And after 40 years on the backside of a desert, God reaches down and by form of a burning bush gets a man's attention, his name Moses. Now Moses was just like any Baptist. You stop to see something that's curious looking, don't you? All these people that see wrecks, you know, rubbernecking when you're on I-85, there's a guy with a flat tire. Everybody comes to stop. Why? A bunch of Baptists are watching. They want to see. And after several excuses that Moses offers to God, finally God says, Moses, that's enough. I've called you to let my people go. Go before Pharaoh. Lead them out. Now get to it now. And so Moses does. Moses makes his journey and he's met by Pharaoh. And as to be expected, Pharaoh didn't want to let the Israelites go. He had a lot of good cheap labor. And Pharaoh and Moses begin to go back and forth. Or I should really say, God and Pharaoh begin to go back and forth. Pharaoh said, who is this God? Who is God that I should obey Him? A few chapters later, he agreed that he probably should change his mind. You see, God had a way of getting Pharaoh's attention through plagues, through locusts, through blood that had turned to water, through frogs that stunk to high heaven once they had died. And my friend, I'm here to tell you tonight that God knows how to get your attention as well. God knows exactly what area to put His finger on in your life to get your attention. Never forget it. And finally, Pharaoh, he begins to waver in his mind. And he begins to think, well, maybe I should let them go. Maybe I'll let them go a little ways. And okay, well, maybe I'll let them go and I'll just not let them take their cattle. And finally, we come to the point where Israel is about to make its exodus out of Egypt. And that's where we're at tonight. Israel is fleeing Egypt, and once again, Pharaoh changes his mind. He says, you know what? With a hardened heart, I think I'm going to go and take all of them back. And so now we find the nation of Israel, they're trapped. On one side is the Red Sea. Behind them are the armies of Pharaoh that are surely going to take them back into bondage. Do you understand the urgency in the heart of Israel tonight? a big body of water that seemingly cannot be spanned by 2 million people, and behind you, these people want to take you back into bondage, beat your children, and make your life miserable as they give you impossible tasks to do and hardly the material to do it. And then we come to verse number 10 of Exodus 14. And when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid, and the children of Israel cried out unto the Lord. In verse number 11, and they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians, for it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. Do you see their desperation tonight? God has orchestrated all of these events. They're privy to all of the plagues to the Egyptians. And yet at the moment that is of the most crucial hour, we find their faith wavering. And they say to Moses, Moses, did you bring us out here to die? Moses, didn't we tell you it's better off for us to have served in Egypt than to die in this wilderness? And tonight I want to speak to you on this subject, doubting God. Doubting God can paralyze a person. I'll never forget, back in January, my wife had something happen to her that scared us both. For the last 2 to 3 years, she'd been in declining health. We were trying to figure out. At first, they were told it was allergies. We were told that perhaps it was an anti-immune disorder. Then we were told perhaps it was MS. And it seemed like with every layer of symptoms that came, it was more and more frustration. And it was about the second week of January of this year, my wife was laying in bed and she described the experience to me. She said, honey, she said, I woke up. She said, I could move my eyes, but it seemed like everything within me was paralyzed. She said, I hardly felt like I could even breathe. My heart was racing in my chest. And she said, for a few moments, she said, I just couldn't move a thing. We came out later to find that she'd had an adrenal crash, and after a lot of testing, they discovered that she'd had Lyme's disease for maybe 2 to 3 years. And she's currently being treated for that, and she's making progress slowly but surely. I've never experienced that kind of paralysis physically, but can I be candid before you tonight? I've experienced a spiritual paralysis whenever I've doubted God. I felt like I could hardly move, to the point where I had no idea of what to do. That's exactly where we find the nation of Israel tonight. Now, I don't know who I'm speaking to this evening. There may be some of you right now that you say, preacher, there's no problem in my life. I'll tell you, I've never doubted God. Now, if that's you tonight, listen, you are a very, very highly esteemed person because I think you're rare. I think all of us in our human moments, there have been times, there have been at least moments or seasons of doubt in our mind, and we've had to wrestle with it. There may be some of you tonight, you say, preacher, I really do sometimes at this point in my life, I look and I say, oh, I don't even know what I'm going to do. I look and I say, God, where in the world are you? And if that's you tonight, I just want you to listen for a few moments. Because you're going to find that history can repeat itself. Just as God delivered Israel, I'll assure you tonight, God can deliver you. And so let's begin this evening. I want you to see several things. I think 5 or 6 tonight will do. Would you think that'd be enough for a message tonight? Some of you say, well, the fewer the better. Well, it all depends. I want to begin tonight by first of all telling you that everybody in this room is capable of doubting God. Every last one of you. This preacher included. Unless you don't think that, let me remind you of some characters in the Bible that doubted God, one being Abraham. Do you remember God came to Abraham? He said, Abraham, I am going to make you the father of many people. Abraham, I'm going to raise up a nation like you've never seen. And the problem was, is Abraham and Sarah had no children. That's sort of hard to do, isn't it? It's hard to have grandchildren when you don't have children. It's hard to have great-grandchildren when you don't have grandchildren. The problem was, as the biological clock was ticking, we find that Abraham and Sarah were drawing Social Security by modern-day standards and still having no children. Till it finally comes to the point that Abraham and Sarah, they begin to doubt God so much that you know what happens? They concoct a plan and they say, all right, Sarah says, I'll give you my handmaiden in my stead. And so Hagar conceives and Ishmael is born. And here's the problem. He's still not the son of promise. Now you might shake your head tonight and say, I can't believe that Abraham would do such a thing. I can just tell you tonight very kindly, look in the mirror and shake your head and say, I can't believe I do some of the things that I do sometimes. But in a moment of weakness, Abraham and Sarah took things into their own hands. You know why? They doubted God. Sarah laughed, the Bible said. But Abraham and Sarah did it, and sometimes we do as well. Moses, he doubted God. God came to Moses and said, Moses, I want you to go and lead my people. And Moses says, well, I'm not very eloquent. Neither heretofore, I think was part of the phrase he used. I read that and say, Moses, by modern day standards, you sounded pretty eloquent to me. I don't know if he was just making excuses or just happened to say a lucky phrase. I don't know, but God said, Moses, I want you. And Moses, he bargains with God. And he's like, why don't you send my brother? And God said, that's it, Moses. I said, I want you. The anger of God was kindled against Moses. Why? Because he doubted him. And yet, like Abraham and Sarah got back on track and followed God, Moses did the exact same thing. And now tonight we find Israel that way. Israel's looking on one side, there's certain enslavement. They're looking on another side. How in the world can we be delivered? And uncertainty has gripped their soul and panic has set in. But I want to tell you, there's some other people tonight that you better make sure that you realize that they've doubted God. And that's people like me and you. The longer I live, the more adversity comes into my life. And I don't think it's because God is just trying to weigh me down. I just think that's the course of life. Listen, when you're a kid, life is throwing dirt clods and drinking your favorite color Kool-Aid, isn't it? Going to the cupboard and eating whatever you want, but there comes a day when you put the groceries in the cupboard. There comes a day when you read the obituaries and you start seeing your friends' names. There comes a day when you go to the doctor and he says, you're not as young as you used to be. It's just by the mere nature of things that we face that adversity. And sometimes human beings like us in the house of God, just like Israel, just like Moses, just like Abraham, we begin to doubt God. So understand, everybody in this room is capable of doubting God. And we probably do it more than we care to admit. But number two tonight, I want you to understand from our story that doubt will cause you to love the bondage of Egypt more than the deliverance of God. Did you hear what Israel said? There are no graves in Egypt. Hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? And then in verse number 12, they said, for it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. They said it would have been better for us to be back in the world than to live in this fear. They had no idea what they were saying. Sometimes our fear causes us to say things that the truth is, it's foolish. You're here tonight and you'd say, well, if I wasn't living for God, I'd be living this way. At least I wouldn't have this and I wouldn't have that. Listen, if you were today living back in the world and you had never been born again, you might think you'd have things good this side of eternity. But my friend, for the rest of eternity, it'd be horrible. But that's the way our minds think. We think to ourselves, we think, oh boy, if I could just have everything. Listen, we live in such a materialistic world. We think that things will solve our problems. Listen to me tonight. Only Jesus can solve your problems. You say, well, if I just had more money, if I just had transportation, if I just had a larger home, none of them can give you forgiveness tonight. None of them can give you peace. None of them can give you permanent joy. But when we doubt God, we look back and say, boy, I wish we could have that, when the truth is it really wasn't that good. There may be some of us here tonight. We're looking back and we say, boy, I wish we could go back to that. It's a sign that you're doubting God. But number three this evening, when we focus on the visible, we doubt the invisible. When we focus on the visible, we doubt the invisible. When I was a kid growing up, I was the only child, so I talked to invisible friends. I can still remember, I was playing basketball. We lived in a mobile home. And the basketball goal was at the end of the trailer. And I remember I'd be out there and I'd play hours on end. But you know, it just got tiring when it was just you. So I remember I'd just play against imaginary people. Now the fun thing about doing that is every time you played, you beat them. You know, you could just dictate that. Never one time did the invisible people beat me. But I can still remember sometimes my mother would raise the window of that trailer and she'd listen to me talk to myself. And whenever I discerned that, the curtain would be pulled so that I couldn't see her. But I knew what that woman was doing. She was getting some free entertainment listening to her son talk to himself. And I would stop, go over, bang on that screen, and I'd say, Mama, get out of there, put that window down. You know, it's usually not a good thing. It's not a healthy thing in our society to say, boy, I'll tell you what, you better talk to your invisible friends and you better see the invisible. But you know, in a spiritual sense, there is someone tonight who, while you cannot see him, if I might say it this way, is more real than you are. His name is God. Some people say, well, I've heard those stories of those atheists that say, God, if you're God, strike me dead right now, and nothing happens, and they laugh in glee. Let me tell you, that's not a proof that there is no God. That's a proof of the mercy of God. I'm telling you, this world didn't come into existence by just some one-celled thing that fell out of nowhere. There was a divine architect, his name, God. But one thing that Israel could do, all that they could do was focus on what they could see. And they unfortunately failed to focus on the thing, or the person, I should say, that they could not see. And while Israel had never seen God with their eyes, you know what they had seen? They had seen God's hand move among them to bring them to this point where they're about to escape. It was no fluke. It was no coincidence. It was God's divine hand. And I'm talking to a group of people tonight. You say, I've never seen God with my eyes one time, but you've seen the hand of God work in your life over and over and over and over again. All you've got to do is open them. But too often, when we begin to doubt God, you know why? Because we focus on the visible rather than the invisible. I'm more and more assuredly coming to this conclusion. I don't know everything that God is doing in my life. Sometimes that's the only way I can keep my sanity. Sometimes that's the only way that I can make it to another step. When I realize that God knows the steps better than I do, and that I can't see everything that God is doing in my life. But I have to trust Him. But too often I put more stock in what I can see rather than the one that I can't see. And while human reasoning says it's foolish to put your trust in something that you can't see, divine truth tells us tonight it's foolish to trust in what you see more than the one that you can't see. 2 Corinthians 5:7, the Bible says we have to, for we walk by faith, not by sight. But I'll tell you the problem. It's a lot easier for me to humanly hear the hoofbeats of the armies of Pharaoh than it is to see the deliverance of God. It's a whole lot easier for me to hear a doctor's report or to happen to see something unfolding in my family or to see something that's happening that may be unpleasant to me. It's a lot easier for those things to be more real to me than God Himself. And it exposes me when I doubt God. I want to ask you tonight, are you focusing on the visible more than the invisible? The world says that's the way that you ought to live. But God said, that's not the way I've intended for you to live if you're a child of God. But number four tonight, I want you to see that doubt causes us to call God's character into question. You ever thought you were being mistreated by God, humanly speaking? You ever thought to yourself, boy, does God, do you not care? When we experience this doubt, these are the kinds of thoughts that go through our mind. We begin to doubt God's love and care for us. Let me give you a great example. I love the Bible. You know why? It's filled with human beings just like you and me that have some of the same thoughts. In Mark chapter 4, Jesus is asleep in a boat. And a storm comes. Now, there are some of you that could sleep through about anything. But here, this small boat, Jesus is asleep in the boat. The storm is raging. And the disciples come to Jesus in Mark chapter 4 and verse 38. Now listen to what it says. These disciples, it says, and he was in the hinder part of the ship, asleep on a pillow. And they awake him and they said unto him, Master, carest thou not that we perish? You know one thing that I encourage you to do? When you read the Bible, you ought to read it like you think they said it. I don't think they came in and said, Master, carest thou not that we perish? I don't think they came in and said, Master, carest thou not that we perish? No, I'll tell you, had I been Peter, had I been John, and my heart been with faithlessness, I would have marched down to the hinder part of that boat, and I would have announced to the world and said with the greatest earnest, don't you care? And remember who that was said to, Jesus. But folks, the disciples aren't the only ones that talk to Jesus that way. I have. And you probably have too. There have been times that my trust, my faith in God, or I should say the lack thereof, has been greatly exposed in the time of crisis. And I begin to doubt God's love. I begin to doubt God's care. God told Israel a beautiful thing in Jeremiah 31 and verse 3. The Lord hath appeared of old unto me, saying, yea, I have loved thee with an everlasting love. And therefore with loving kindness have I drawn thee. Listen, Israel had no reason to doubt. God loved them so much that He raised up a man in the most unlikely of means to deliver them out of the bondage of Egypt. And He wanted to take them to a promised land. But this was a step that they had to take. And sometimes those painful steps, it's not a sign of God's hate, it's a sign of God's love, but we fail to realize it. My friend, the reason you're here tonight, if you're a child of God, the reason you're here tonight and can say, I have peace with God, the reason you can say, I have God's forgiveness, you know why that is? That's because of God's love for you. I'll tell you, the Bible says that He loved us before we loved Him. I wasn't looking for God. I wasn't looking to call out to some supernatural being to save me. I didn't have enough sense. I was so depraved, and yet God looked down and saw me. When the entire human race is cursing Him, yet God sends His Son Jesus to die on the cross to redeem that world. Now that's love. And by the way, that's not a love you'll learn from Hollywood or a lot of the music industry today. A lot of that is not L-O-V-E, it's L-U-S-T. I want, give me. But I'll tell you, divine love gives, and that's exactly what God did when He gave Jesus to die on the cross for you and for me. And even though that's the greatest of gifts, sometimes in our humanity we doubt God. Deuteronomy 7, verses 7 and 8, God told Israel, it says, "The Lord did not set His love upon you, nor choose you, because ye were more in number than any people, for ye were the fewest of all people. But because the Lord loved you, and because He would keep the oath which He had sworn unto your fathers, hath the Lord brought you out with a mighty hand, and redeemed you out of the house of bondmen from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt." God looked down and He said, "Listen, I didn't love you because of what I could get out of you." Now see, that's what worldly love does today. I'll love you if you give me this, give me what I want. That's foreign to God. It's not a negotiating table. It's not a bargain. But the truth is, we begin to doubt God's character. God, do you love me? God, do you care? Hey, tonight the invitation stands clear. 1 Peter 5, verse number 7, casting all your care upon Him, for He careth for you. No amount of foolishness can change God's cry to you tonight to cast your care upon Him. Sometimes we doubt God's power and His ability. I've got news for you tonight. We're helpless. Did you know that? We need to go back to our childhood singing days and say, "We're weak, but He is strong. Yes, Jesus loves me." But sometimes these situations put us in the most vulnerable. Not a thing we can do. After all, Israel can't snap their fingers and get a cruise boat and go across the Red Sea. Neither can they just all of a sudden hire an army at the drop of a hat to stem the armies of Pharaoh. They are vulnerable. There's nothing else they can do. When you begin to doubt God's power and His ability. Job 42:2, Job said this after he had experienced everything that he had experienced. Now let's stop for just a moment. When I read the book of Job and I see the depths of what he went through, he lost his children in horrible fashion. Job lost his material possessions, stock market crash of his day, if you want to put it that way. Job had a wife that said, "Curse God and die." Don't be too hard on her. Maybe she couldn't stand watching her husband suffer. And with all of those things, Moses begins to be, quote unquote, encouraged by three friends. He experiences a boil from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet. His health is robbed from him, yet he maintains a consistency. "Neither have I gone back from the commandment of his lips. I have esteemed the words of his mouth more than my necessary food." That's in verse chapter 23. And then in Job 42, Job says this. He says to God, "I know that thou canst do everything, and that no thought can be withholden from thee." After experiencing all those valleys, Job knew more than ever that God was omnipotent, that He was all-powerful. There's not a crisis in my life that is above God's pay grade. There's not a difficulty that I experience that stumps Him. But I sometimes doubt His power and His ability, and sometimes I doubt His word and His promises. You know, promise is a very important thing. My daughter Karis has reminded me of that. She's 10 years old. My two older boys, Andrew and Jared, they did something awful to their young sister when she was younger. They'd scare her to death repeatedly. Well, the problem is when they did that, she didn't want to sleep by herself. Now, I eventually fixed the problem when I marched her up to their room one day and I said, "This girl's sleeping with y'all till you stop." After about one night of that, that stopped. They said, "We don't want that happening anymore. This is a guy's room. She doesn't need to be in here." But I remember in the time where I had to woo her back to her room, I would go in there and she would say, "Now, Dad, will you sleep with me tonight?" And I'd say, "Oh, honey, you're a big girl, you know." And she'd say, "Daddy, I want you to sleep with me." I'd come in and I'd say, "All right, honey, I'll sleep with you, but just roll over there and I'll lay down right there." And she'd get to talking a little bit. She's a chatterbox. And she'd say, "Now, Daddy, you are going to sleep in here all night, aren't you?" I'd say, "Well, you know, honey, it sure was a nice day outside, wasn't it?" "Oh, yeah, Daddy, it was pretty. The wind was blowing." And 5 minutes later, "Now, Daddy, you are going to stay in here all night, aren't you?" That's when you say, "Well, honey, what do you want for Christmas?" My boys the other day found my daughter had a notebook with all of her Christmas stuff that she wanted, and they were laughing. I said, "Don't worry, you boys did the same thing. Knock it off. You just circled it in the catalog. You didn't write it down." And boy, I'll tell you, after so long, she finally looked at me and said, "Now, Daddy, you stop it. Now, you are sleeping in here with me all night, aren't you?" And I'd say, "Yes, honey, I will. I will." And then she'd look at me with those big brown eyes and she'd say, "You promise?" I said, "Yes, honey, I promise." I'm going to tell you what, a promise is a great thing to a child. And by the way, for you young parents here tonight, listen, don't you take that for granted. You can dash the hopes of your kids and sometimes affect their view of God Himself when you don't stick true to your word. But you know, just like a little 5 or 6 year old girl yearns for the promise of her earthly father, this ought to be an auditorium tonight filled with people that would keep their eyes upon the promises of their heavenly father. Genesis 21:1, "And the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken." That was a pretty tremendous thing. This lady is going to give birth to a child at the age of 90 years old. What the world said is impossible, God said it's possible, but He kept His word. I'm telling you, if God can cause Sarah to have a baby, and if God can cause the Red Sea to part, don't you believe God can keep His word in your life too? In Exodus 2:24, "And God heard their groaning, and God remembered His covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and Jacob." That was the precursor. That's the reason He delivers the nation of Israel. Why? He remembers what He told Abraham. There may be some things that slip your mind, but I promise you nothing slips God's mind. And every promise in that book that you hold tonight, child of God, I want you to know something. God's not forgotten it, and neither should you. Sometimes doubt causes us to doubt God's character. We begin to doubt His love and care. We begin to doubt His power and His ability. And we doubt His word and His promises. But number 5 tonight, I want you to see that doubt can be conquered if you'll go forward. Notice with me in verse number 13. "And Moses said unto the people, Fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which He will show to you today. For the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever." That sounds a little bit redundant, doesn't it? Moses said, listen, you see those Egyptians, you're going to see them no more. And then he says on top of that, forever. And I'm telling you, that's like chocolate cake with chocolate icing. He's making a point. He's saying, listen, assuredly, I'm telling you, you'll not see them ever again. And then in verse 14, "The Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace." And the Lord said unto Moses, "Wherefore criest thou unto me? Speak unto the children of Israel, that they go forward." Did Israel have their season of doubt? You better believe they did. But I want you to know that when the Red Sea parted, somebody began to march through. Now, some of you would say this side of it, you'd say, well, I mean, that's pretty obvious. If God parts the Red Sea, well, I'd want to walk through that. So you really would want to walk through two walls of water, not seeing how they're suspended and wondering, are they going to fall back down on me? I'm telling you, there was a measure of faith on Israel's part. You know how Israel conquered their doubt? They conquered their doubt when they just began to go forward. There are times in your life where you may not feel like going forward. There's sometimes the way you feel is not the right thing. There's some of you tonight, maybe you live by feelings a lot. Feelings aren't a bad thing. I heard a preacher make this statement. It made a lot of sense to me. He said, Christianity should not be emotionless, but he said, neither should it be emotion-led. I know what he's talking about. Because if you did what you felt like all the time, half of you'd be dead in this room. You'd say, my children, the mother, so I could just kill him. I can't believe he did that. You say, well, I wouldn't kill him, but I'd lock him in a box for a few years. Listen, there are times you feel in such a way. You say, I just feel worn. I feel weary. You say, I just feel like I can't handle it anymore. And God told the nation of Israel, regardless of how you feel, what's behind you and what's approaching, He said, go forward. And they did. I can't give you a pill tonight to erase doubt, but I can tell you this. You can take God at His word and go forward, and I promise God will deliver you too. But now remember this, deliverance doesn't always come the way we expect. Had I been the nation of Israel, I'd have said, every last one of you dead right there. That's not how God was going to do it. No, they were going to go through the Red Sea, and then once they got in the midst of the Red Sea, then that water would drown them. But I found sometimes I thought deliverance was God just immediately removing this. Sometimes God's deliverance for me was just giving me the grace to get through it. A lot of times I pray, God, remove it, when sometimes I ought to be praying, God, just give me grace and help me day by day. Lord, I don't know how I made it today, but if You help me today, Lord, I know You'll help me tomorrow. And you take those cumulative steps. But here's the last thing that I want to leave you with. After Israel goes forward, they go through there, and remember what happens? The water comes down upon the armies of Egypt, and they drown. You say, well, they didn't take their swim test? Listen, brother, I don't care how good you can swim. You can't survive all that water coming down on you and just plunging you to the bottom. You know what the nation of Israel did after that? Chapter 15, verse number 1. Then sang Moses and the children of Israel this song unto the Lord. The last thing that I want to tell you tonight is that some of the sweetest songs that you will ever hear come after a season of doubt. Israel is scared to death. God delivers them in an amazing fashion, and then they break out and sing, and it's a song. Listen, it doesn't rhyme. Not in English anyway. Maybe in Hebrew, but not in English. I don't know how you can make anything rhyme in Hebrew. It's got such crazy letters in it, but anyway. And they began to sing. You know, sometimes weeping, we weep all night long, but aren't you glad there's times that you eventually experience that joy in the morning? I know, I pray that it would come as soon as possible. But that weeping comes, but then joy comes in the morning. Boy, Israel, they began to sing. And when they sing, let me tell you, they didn't sing foolishness. They didn't sing row, row, row your boat. They didn't sing she'll be coming down the mountain. I'll tell you what they started singing. They started singing, God is great and powerful and mighty. He is our Redeemer. He is our strength. And they even begin to tell the story. I love songs that tell stories. I can relate to that. Some of us have short attention spans, but if you hook me with a story, I can stay with it. I mean, they talk about how Pharaoh came and rode into the sea and the waters came and killed them and how they were victorious. You remember when you were a kid in school and your team won kickball? I mean, when it was all over with, you were just dancing around. You were jumping up and down. You were hyper. You said, "This is wonderful." I know we as adults, we're a little more dignified now, but I'm going to tell you, it doesn't hurt once in a while. We get that point of deliverance that we just take some time, if I could say it, not in an irreverent fashion, but just celebrate what God has done. But sometimes those bright spots don't come until the dark valley has been gone through, until the uncertainty has afflicted our souls in a certain way. But I'm glad to know that when I do have my seasons of doubt, that while I'm very keenly aware of them, I'm glad that there's a God in heaven that is merciful, that knows that I am made of but clay, and is long-suffering with me. I'll tell you, had I written the book of Hebrews, and especially chapter 11, I would have written it differently than I believe the Apostle Paul wrote it. And if you say, "Well, I don't believe that," well, I know the Holy Spirit did, so we can agree on that. But I'll tell you what, I'd have written Hebrews chapter 11. You know the people he's praising in Hebrews chapter 11? Abraham. God doesn't go out there and say, "Let me tell you all the crazy, foolish things that Abraham did." Yeah. He doubted me and messed this up. This Middle Eastern thing you've got going on right now, thank him for it. I'm going to tell you, I look at that, and you know all God sees? God just mentions, hey, he looked for a city whose builder and maker was God. Sarah, she laughed. What's he doing commending Sarah in Hebrews chapter 11? Why, you go on farther. You see, he mentions other people, and I'm like, well, listen here. We see all of their imperfections. We're so good at pointing them out. Yeah, but he did this, and yeah, but he did that. But even after their seasons of doubt, God reached down and he said, listen, I'm going to honor your faith. You went forward. Yes, you stumbled, but you continued on. And that's what God chose to speak of. And if you're here tonight and a season of doubt has gripped your soul, I encourage you, when you leave this place tonight, read Hebrews chapter 11. You may not ever attain. Well, I know you'll never attain to being in the hall of faith in Hebrews 11 because you can't add your name in. It's too late. But I'm telling you, the same God that honored their faith will honor yours if you'll get up and you'll go. Folks, sometimes we're a lot weaker than we care to admit. And when we reach that point, we'd do well just to lay on our faces before God and tell Him how weak we are and how strong He is. And then get up off of our feet and look at the Red Sea and start marching towards it. You're here tonight, my friend, you've been doubting God. Tonight is the night to stop. And tonight is the night to go forward. Let's bow our heads together. Our heads are bowed and our eyes are closed tonight. I want to ask you a few questions, and in a moment we'll stand together.